Welcome to the Cabin Culture Podcast, where we spend a little more time diving deeper into all the fun parts of cabin culture. I like to think of this as both the material and imagined expressions of how cabin lovers, dwellers, builders, and designers wish to live a more simple and authentic life. On this episode, I'm talking to Ivana and Darren, the owners and hosts behind The Hote House, Colorado. While I originally reached out to them to talk about their Colorado rentals, I had no idea they had such a rich history with short-term rentals, starting in California, then Louisiana, now Colorado, both on their property and not, surviving two hurricanes and eventually turning those lemons into lemonade with their newest A-frame. On this episode, we talk about all the challenges that come with this history, including facing short-term rental regulations, insurance claims, rebuilding, and now hosting from abroad. You are not going to want to miss this one, so let's do it. Hi, Ivana and Darren. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
Can you start by telling me where you're located? Because this is a little bit different than most of our podcasts. Where are you podcasting from?
Yeah, so we're in Northern England. So the town that, or the village that we live in is called Swanland. And the closest big city, if you're looking at a map, is Hull, H-U-L-L.
Okay. But you don't sound British. So tell me a little bit more about how you ended up there.
Well, it's because of him. And
it's my fault.
We asked for it. We've been asking for a long time to get over here. So we're super excited. But we're both originally from California. We've moved all over the state. And then this summer in June 2023, we moved to England.
Yeah, we found a job here with my company, and we wanted to make a change and try something new. So we've been wanting to be here for a long time and finally came together.
What made you want to be there originally? Did you travel there a while ago?
Yeah, I would say Ivana's got heritage in Germany. So she's still got family in Germany. Mm-hmm. My family is originally from the United Kingdom. So we do have some roots here. And then I think we wanted to be near Europe and travel, and we've got young kids, so it was neat to be able to bring them here and expose them. Our daughter's just starting school here, so she's working on her British accent.
That must be weird having little ones in a different country, because they're literally spending most of their day with people with accents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially her. So she's just about to turn three, and so she's really just getting into speaking age with. Surrounded by British folks. It's kind of fun for her and for us to see that happen.
Is this a permanent stop for you, or is this like the start of maybe traveling more?
Mm. It's not permanent. I think we have about a 3-year visa, and then we can always try to extend that with my work and those kinds of things. But it's, I think we want to get back to the States, but it's kind of a fun stop in life, a little bit of an adventure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I lived in Tokyo when I was in middle school because of my dad's job, and I look back on it so fondly as like a formative life-shaping experience of being in a different country.
That's amazing.
You know, we love Japan.
Yeah, it's the best, and it was so culturally different than the States too, so it was just like fascinating going over there and then coming back and having to readjust to high school in the States after having been at an international school there. Anyway, great move for your kids. I love that for you.
Yeah, we couldn't say no.
My twin sister is trying to convince her husband to eventually take up, because her company is Swedish, and she wants to, and their kids are 9 and 6. Mm-hmm. So she wants to do the same thing. And he is not as sold as she is yet. So we'll see what happens.
Push the envelope. That's great.
Yeah. I want to start with your individual stories and where cabin culture started for both of you. And then I want to find out how you met, because I know how you met ties into a little bit of kind of what you're doing now. But start individually, how you each were introduced to cabin culture.
So I grew up going to a cabin every year, multiple times a year. So I'm from Concord, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area. And my family has a cabin. We still own it. It's still in the family. It's in Northern California. It's in a town called Whiskeytown Lake. So south of Shasta, really close to Redding. And I mean, that really just when you sent me the pre-questionnaire, it really was like a therapy session. I was digging up all these memories and wow, it shaped so much for me, like my love of outdoors and like I love to forage and like I did that my whole youth and hiking and just it just felt like the freedom that you couldn't get in the city. And like I just always knew that wasn't me. And yeah, so it was great. It was just a little shack. Funny enough, it was a kit home. So my great grandparents bought it from the Sears Roebuck catalog and it came on a flatbed truck and it was just a plywood house. But it was like, it was just glorious. It was nothing fancy. It had a huge swamp cooler in the summer and a giant fire. Like it was just like a potbelly cast iron. You couldn't see the fire or anything, but we used to cook on it all the time, which I'm obsessed with fire cooking. And I started thinking about that. And yeah, it was just everything for us as a family. And my grandpa moved up to the area in his retirement. So he lives in Red Bluff, which isn't that far away, about an hour or so. But when he moved up there for his retirement, he rented it out for a long-term rental. And so he's been doing that ever since. So it is still in the family and I hope it stays that way. But yeah, so that's really where it all kind of started for me. Like my grandparents went there every weekend and
this makes sense. You mentioned that you like from scratch cooking. And when I saw that, I was like, does this just mean like you buy the ingredients at the grocery store? But now I'm thinking that it means you actually forage the ingredients or make them. And then what does from scratch cooking mean for you? And did it come from the cabin back in the day?
I mean, I didn't really connect those dots until your questionnaire, really. I was like, holy moly, there's a lot to unfold here. But yeah, I love to forage any way I can. It's just not like with two little ones, it's so much harder. But yeah, England has been so fun because there's always something around us. So that's been really fun for me. But from scratch to me, it's just as pure as you can get it. And then it just kept getting worse as the older I got. So at first it was just like, oh, you know, maybe it's like homemade pasta sauce because that's what I grew up with. And then it just kept getting more and more. It just depends location wise, because there's only so much resources you can have, especially since we move around a lot. So my resources change every few years. But yeah, that's
which has got to be a challenge. But I kind of like that as part of this really natural cooking, right? Is that you're working with what you have. So it would change geographically wherever you go, because what's accessible is just going to be different. And then what you're making is reflective of the place that you're actually living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not like every single meal is forage meal or any by any stretch, but yeah, no, it is. It's super fun. Like if we can offset anything, like I enjoy it. Like I don't mind cutting the bugs out and turning nothing into something. Like it's super fun for me. The kids love it. And yeah, I don't know. It just kind of fosters what I had as a kid.
Yeah. Darren, what about you?
So I did not grow up with a cabin in the family, but I did grow up with a ski family. So my dad and my mom, big skiers, they actually owned a ski business, outdoors business. And so I skied at a very, very young age. And we would always go rent cabins or go to friends' cabins in pursuit of fresh powder. And so that was kind of my connection. And I was always jealous of people with cabins. And we kind of dabbled in it as a family. We thought we were going to make it happen, but it never quite came to fruition. So this has been kind of a fun experience to try to recreate some of those memories for our kids.
Yes. Okay. So that takes me to how did the two of you meet? Because Ivana, you told me that you travel a lot and stay at a lot of short-term rentals. And that actually is part of your story of how you met. So can both of you tell me the story of how you met?
Sure. Yeah. So very close. We actually more met off of remodeling than short-term rentals. Okay. That's kind of is it your turn to tell a story?
Oh, I can tell sure.
Your turn.
Yes. We started dating right as I got out of school, out of college, and moved back to the Bay Area. And I had taken a job there. And a friend of mine and I bought a fixer-upper house in California in the Bay Area. And we decided we were going to just gut it and renovate the whole thing. It was very much in need of a complete remodel. And we had no idea what we were doing. We had nowhere near enough money in our bank accounts and whatnot. But we went for it. And it all turned out okay. But during that process, Ivana was down the street working at a Ace Hardware store for her
Oh.
school. And so I would go into the Ace Hardware and became a more frequent visitor, as you can imagine. And we became good friends. And then ultimately, I asked her out on a date and she laughed at me. So I didn't get the date.
Well, he did say, "How much more pointless shit do I have to buy to get you to go out on a date with me?" Which was pretty
Okay, that's a
funny.
good line.
Pretty funny.
Yeah,
It didn't
that's a
work
good
for me.
line.
She just laughed. But then later, I had special ordered a lawnmower. And so she, probably against company policy, stole my number off the special order form. And she called me at home and said, "How about that drink?" And the rest was history.
I love that bold moves on each of your parts, because it's hard enough to ask someone out when you're just randomly at a store, but then to have them ask you out and then look up their phone number and just actually call them. I feel like that doesn't happen anymore.
So we always talk about that. We feel like we really lucked out. We dodged the current era of dating and
Yep.
everything, and we're
Not by
really,
much,
yeah,
but.
quite happy.
This is so funny because for anyone who's remodeled a house, you know exactly how often you end up at the hardware store. And it's like at best is once a day. At worst, you're there multiple times in one day. And I remember from my first remodel, the friends that I made at the hardware store who are just like, "Oh, it's you again. How's the house coming along?" And the fact that that's where you met is kind of the perfect remodel love story.
Yeah, it's funny too because I can think of some of your episodes going back in cabin culture and other people. It warms my heart because I hear other people's stories of friendships or what have you that were almost, you look back, and invaluable in your cabin
Yeah.
building experience, and you don't know you're going to find that person, and it just
Yes.
turns into something great.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Rob from Adirondack A-Frame. What was his
Yeah,
guy's name?
I think it was Paul. I think it was
Paul.
Paul.
Yes, it was for all things Paul.
That's right.
Yes, and Paul was it was his hardware store best friend, not quite a love story, but in many ways a love story because it's hard to find really good people to help
It
during a build.
is hard. And so I connected with that episode so much because,
Yes.
yeah, through our lives, we've done a lot of remodels together, and there's always a Paul, and they're always a bit
Yes.
quirky and a bit, I don't know, we just have some great stories. We have a Wayne
Marky Mark.
and a Mark, and yeah, there's all these people and characters along the way.
Yes. Okay, so I want to take it a little bit further. You all met, you were working on a current reno, but I know you've done a lot of them together, and now you own a portfolio of, I believe it's 9 properties. Are you building your 10th, or is the newest cabin the ninth?
So we the newest cabin would be the 9th short-term rental. And then we
Okay.
have we've gotten into so we got lucky on that first one, and then we got lucky on a couple more, and we were able to turn that into we have a share an apartment building, and we have a number of longer term rentals. So
Okay.
we're kind of spread amongst rental duration. So we have some long term, some short term.
Right. Okay. So this is so interesting because you find people on Instagram in the cabin world, and it's usually for one cabin, right? Like you started the account for your cabin in Colorado. I had no idea until I was doing my research for this podcast and I looked at your Airbnb and I was like, whoa, they have a lot of other properties. Because I saw, Ivana, that you were a super host for 8 years. And I was like, but this is a newish cabin. So I started digging and I was like, wow, they have a strong history in this. So I'm actually going to start there because a lot of folks that we talk to, the cabin is their first or they have a couple cabins, but yours are all over the place. So how did you all jump into that world? Darren, you're an engineer, is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're an engineer and you went to school for dental hygiene. So how did you enter this world shortly after you met? What was the next step that led you down this path?
Think Pismo is probably the beginning of the short term.
Yeah, so we relocated for work again. That's kind of the theme for us, and we moved down to Pismo, San Luis Obispo area, Central Coast, California. And while
So
there,
you're right near, that's right near
Boho,
Candace, the
not
Boho
far.
A-frame. Yes,
Yeah,
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 so right by
yeah.
Candace, because we did
Yeah.
connect to that place. So that's an amazing place. Love it there.
Yeah. So that was, I think, our first short term.
Yeah, so we bought, well, it was kind of funny because we bought a place down there in Pismo Beach, and
It
our
was a
vision,
fixer-upper.
yeah, it was another fixer-upper, and our vision there was to turn it into a short-term rental. And then we got a little bit sideways because the city, there's a really strong hotel lobby there, and city or No, it was city, not county. They passed some legislation that made it very, very difficult to short-term rent. So
Only a
we've,
couple months after we bought it.
yeah, it was very
So
bad
that
timing.
was our whole thing. It's like we basically turned it into a duplex
Yeah.
so that we could lock off the bottom and rent it out independently. And then when we had guests or whatever, we needed the extra bedroom, we would just not host. And then we had an extra spare bedroom. But it was like the perfect setup. And a few months after we had finished that and we purchased the place, they passed the law and we couldn't do it anymore. But we were planning to short term it after we moved and keep it. We wanted to keep it as like a forever home.
Yeah,
Yeah,
but
that didn't work.
I feel like my stomach just sinks when I hear that because it's everyone's fear, right? That you invest money and time and energy, and then all of a sudden the goalpost moves, right? And like, or the rules have changed, and you're like, wait, what do I do now?
Yeah, we
So
learned a
how did you
lot.
change your vision?
We adapted. So we I mean it was also a primary home for us. So it was okay. And then we did maybe somewhat questionably, we filed an application for short-term renting, but we did also continue to short-term rent there. And we do really love hosting. And so we met a lot of great people. And we worked with the city, but ultimately we couldn't get it to be as long as we lived there, it was okay, but we couldn't move away and keep renting it and keep, which was the original vision. And I think at that point we were like 6 figures into the remodel. We had done a put a lot of, and it's all our work, right? We do very few contractors, at least in the early stage. And so that was pretty heartbreaking. But it worked out in the end.
Hindsight's
So
2020. We
what
should
did
have
you do?
just rented it. We should have just rented it
Long
long
term
term
rented.
and not sold it, but we did end up selling it.
So we ended up selling it, and while we were there, we did get lucky. We found another investment property. I'm sorry, I keep losing my AirPod. We found another property in San Luis Obispo proper, and that one was kind of another fun one. So I'll tell you both because it kind of ended up all working together. So that one was a it was a small house, and then it had a detached garage, and the garage was short. It was only 7-foot ceilings, and so we ended up actually picking that up, pouring a new footing under it. We built a fence down the yard, and we turned it into 2 units, and.
Did you do all that yourself?
Not
Well,
all
we
of it.
had contractors,
I
but
had some help, but most of it. Yeah, so I didn't do the foundation work. I didn't do any of the concrete work, but all the permitting.
Or the picking up of the house?
No, I mean, I know I look really strong, but
Well, you're an engineer, and I don't put anything past engineers. If anyone can figure it out, it's an engineer, but that seems like a hard one.
we got some help, and then we.
My hip's never been the same.
Yeah, it was rough on the body, but we finished that remodel, and then so we had those on Airbnb, and Ivana was kind of hosting those, and so we were turning those over, and then we had our place in Pismo, and we were kind of settling in, and this is going to be perfect. The rules did change, so we ultimately sold the Pismo place, but we did keep the San Luis Obispo place for a long time. Just recently sold it to do a 1031 exchange into something else, but yeah, so we
Can you explain a 1031 exchange for anyone who doesn't know what that is?
yeah, far from a tax advisor or anything else like that, but yeah, generally, right? So taking the equity from a property you have by selling it, entering it into a 1031 exchange, which requires some pre-planning. You got to get some people to help you, and then so you put the money essentially in a escrow account, if you will, and then you need to use that money within a certain length of time to go buy another property of similar application or similar use. And so in this case, we sold it and we bought a share of an apartment building.
And just to clarify, and why people would do that is to avoid capital
Thank
gains
you. Yeah,
tax.
that's
So you
probably an
don't need to
important thing to
spend. Okay,
mention.
yeah. Because it sounds complicated if there's no benefit, but we're looking at doing that right now with selling one of ours, but it helps you avoid then whatever appreciation or gained equity or whatever. You don't have to pay tax on that yet until eventually you actually
That's
like
right.
pocket that money.
Yeah, you can just keep pushing that down the road, so to speak. So yeah, it worked out. It was a little stressful doing that because I've heard you talking about selling your places, and you guys are thinking, which I'm very interested in where you end up. But yeah, it's challenging to do it because of the timeline and all that kind of stuff.
That's my biggest hesitation, I think, is just that it feels like, oh my God, the timer starts now. And so some of the best advice I've ever gotten was like, wait for the right piece of land or really take your time with the design. But if you do it 1031, I mean, it gives you a year, at least in North Carolina. So there's like some time,
Okay.
but it still feels really stressful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And what we learned on this most recent one, which I'm sure we'll get into, but a year sometimes feels like it's going to be longer than it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It goes by so fast during a build. And we will get to your most recent one, I promise, but I'm not done here.
Fine.
This was early in your marriage. I'm just thinking about, like, these are big projects for early on in a marriage. How did you all, and you've done some since, so I'm guessing it was successful. How did you figure out your roles in those early years so that you work as a team and avoid conflict? Have you figured that out? What worked for you?
Well, full disclosure, we weren't actually married yet.
You were together, though. Yeah.
I'm slow. And so it took
we were together like 8 years before we got married.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But to your point, I think one thing that's been a good bedrock for our relationship is we always have been pretty good at role clarity. And so we really focus on not
kind
not
of unspoken, double. Though.
Yeah, it kind of just works. And she's great at a lot of things that I'm terrible at. And so then similarly, I try to be good at things that she's not. And so we find our lane, and we find that we're most successful when we're not double doing each other's work, right?
Yes.
So it's trust, and we're far from perfect. But
oh, yeah. I would say postpartum, because I know we haven't gotten to the build yet, but the build kind of happened pretty much both for both of my postpartums after my babies, and like mentally so hard to get there. So definitely some tension, like making sure we get everything, and like sometimes I wouldn't be in the mood, but like he'd be in the mood to like buy stuff. And yeah, so like definitely we're far from perfect, but yeah, I'd say most of the time we just kind of have roles that we just do. We don't really talk about them most of the time, and we just do them.
Yeah. Ivana, what's your role?
Ooh.
What are the things that are on your plate?
Social, and I'm so good at it.
I found you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's new for me and our business strategy. But yeah, so I do that most of the time. I do all the short-term rental. So that just kind of
falls. Who are the actual host for all of them?
All of the ones that we have short-term rented, yes.
Wow. Because you have 8 on Airbnb.
Yeah, we didn't get to that.
Yes, we haven't really clarified that. Yeah, that's it's probably going to be longer than an hour.
Maybe. We'll get there. The majority of our 1031 exchange from Paso Robles was into this apartment complex. But we also we bought a share with some partners in a 7-unit place in Paso. And so Paso Robles is near and dear to our heart because it was so near where I went to school and where ultimately we lived. And it just seemed like a great opportunity. It was kind of an off-market thing. And we had a great realtor, and he helped us find this off-market deal. They owner financed it. So it just kind of turned into this perfect storm. And we said, okay, we're going to do it. And so that's those properties. We do have a property manager there, and then we just co-host on that. She co-hosts. I don't.
Okay.
Yeah. The plan is, though, like to have me be slightly more involved in like customer relations, I guess you could say. So that's like the long-term goal. So I will slowly develop a more hands-on role as far as customer relations go.
Yeah. Sort of concierge, guest relations, arranging things for people, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's move to the cabin.
Sorry.
When did, because it sounds like, no, you're great. It sounds like most of them so far have been in the California area. But your cabins are in Colorado. So take us, I mean, hearing about your history skiing, Darren, that makes a lot of sense. But take us to like how you ended up with the cabins.
Well, we have to go to Louisiana first.
Okay, great. Let's do that.
Okay.
So like, go ahead then.
So to get to Colorado, we have to go to Louisiana. So when we sold our place in Pismo, we moved to Lake Charles, Louisiana, which if you're looking at the state, Louisiana is like the boot of the state. So closer to
the
Texas. Yeah. No, the heel of the boot.
The heel of the boot.
Which is closer to Houston than New Orleans. Okay. And so that's where we actually got. So we bought a 1900s Victorian and we completely remodeled it. And then we had a hurricane in 2020. We got married there, and then we had a hurricane in 2020, and then another hurricane. And then we remodeled it again. And when we remodeled it again,
we lost our roof.
You remodeled it again. Did you lose a lot of it in the hurricane?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fairly. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the kind of $200,000 type of damage range. So the house wasn't completely leveled, but we had no roof. We had mold everywhere. We had a lot of, it was
after having put in all that work to renovate it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's still
1900s house. It was a challenge.
Your journey is full of ups and downs. Like some of my worst case scenarios you have experienced and are thriving. This is good for me to see.
Do not recommend the whole hurricane.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a tough experience.
Yeah. So we got married, and then in 2020, it was August of 2020, we had the first hurricane. And then in October of 2020, we had a second hurricane, which was less, but still undid a lot of damage that we had fixed. So that was like another gut punch. And I was like 3 months pregnant. So that was super fun.
And it's COVID.
And
the prices of materials are going up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
So that was an interesting time too. Because I never thought about this around hurricanes, but all the labor dries up because the whole town, I mean, just to give you a perspective on this hurricane, there was not a single power pole left standing in the parish or county, as you would call it there. There's nothing. And mm-hmm. so you have no water, you have no electricity, no power, no sewer. And so you're trying to fix your place, but there's contractors and kind of predators coming in that are trying to, you know, bid you really quick. And it's just this really terrible environment after something like that. And living through that is constant stuff.
Yeah. Do contractors come in from like out of state? Because already regions have issues with finding contractors. I can't imagine if literally everyone needs a contractor.
Yeah.
I had to tell people multiple times, like, get off the property. Like, no, I don't want your business. Because they would just try and start doing stuff to get paid. And yeah, it's honestly, post-hurricane is really scary because you have your cell phones don't work, your electricity, your Wi-Fi, everything's gone. Yeah.
And were you living in the house when that happened?
Kind of, not really.
So we had a couple things. One, we kind of talked about friends along the way, and we had some really, really good friends that were not as affected, and they took us in. Mm-hmm. So we were able to stay with them and then kind of bounce back and forth. And then we also have some friends in Houston, and so we were kind of going to get materials, because you have to go that far to get materials. It's a 2-hour drive. And so I would go before work. So I would go to work, which is also affected by the hurricane. And then in the morning, I would leave at like 3 or 4 in the morning, go get materials hours away, and then make it to work with a truck bed full of stuff, and then go hang sheetrock or whatever we had to do.
After work.
After work, yeah. So that was a long few months.
Mm-hmm.
And you were pregnant, and you were expecting your firstborn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was the first one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What were your biggest lessons from that? Biggest advice for other people that you learned from that?
Have savings and know how to do some basic stuff.
Yeah.
We had to rely, we were lucky, like we had savings because we've like learned that we need to prioritize it even more. And then we were lucky that we had the skill because we have been doing remodels for so long. We both kind of grew up doing it. So
thank goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I would think the other thing for during COVID is I went through all my home insurance policies for the rentals, and I adjusted the total cost to rebuild based on inflation and when cost of materials went up. Because I looked at all of them when the materials were going up, and I was like, I couldn't rebuild this house for that price.
Mm-hmm. So smart.
And
smart.
It didn't cost me. Yeah, and it wasn't like, you know how insurance is. It was like a couple dollars per month to up it by that amount. But it gave me the peace of mind that if I had to rebuild from scratch, I could replicate it based on current prices. And I don't think people do that very often.
No, that's smart.
Yeah, I think our challenge on the insurance front was everybody was filing insurance. And so the payout was very delayed in our experience. And that's what I think Yvonne was ultimately alluding to, is that's what led to the cabin, is we ended up fixing it all up on our own labor. And we managed to scrape by with what we had in savings. And then we got a big check. And then it was like cabin time.
Mm-hmm. But we did some fun things on that. Yeah. Yeah, we did. But on that remodel, we did fun things. Like we were able to restore the hardwood floors in the house were really unique. And we were able to replicate that throughout the part of the home that had lost it pre-hurricane. So like somebody had just didn't restore it properly, and they just put plywood down and there was no floor underneath. So we were able to get custom match flooring and carry it through the house and like really restore the house back to its 1900s status. And then we also put in an in-law unit, which was like a studio apartment. And we short-term rented that. We did really well with that. We loved that place. It was the perfect place for like guests, and then to short-term rent is perfect.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How did you like hosting in your house? I think that's the most nerve-wracking experience for a lot of folks. And to me, it's one of the most rewarding I've had. Mm-hmm. What was your experience like?
Yeah, I would say overall most rewarding. So our Lake Charles experience was better because it was like a detached but attached apartment. And so they couldn't hear us, we couldn't hear them, but they were just on the grounds. And then our place in Pismo, it was they were below us. So that was always just like, oh, hope like we're not making too much noise. So sometimes I can feel impactful, but it's also the most enjoyable. Like the experiences are really good, people are really respectful. Because they know like they're at your house and you're around, and it's also it can be the most profitable.
Yeah, because
So,
you can clean it
over at Costco.
You're
over at Costco and nothing.
I agree. If it's part of your house, you're already paying the electric bill, you're already paying the internet, you're already paying the pest control, like all of those expenses that add up on my other houses, I'm already paying. So it's like almost all profit.
Yeah, I mean, we were doing so. I mean, I don't want to like boast ourselves, but like in Pismo
Do
we
it.
did so well, and in Lake Charles we did so well at our personal homes that we were actually covering our mortgage most of the year. And I think it's uncomfortable sometimes, but you can make it really comfortable and super beneficial.
And you vet the people, right? You look at who's booking your home, and you I mean, it's a little bit of a case study in that. And we didn't miss very often. For the most part, we got good people that left the place clean and really respectful. And some of them, I think we still talk to.
Yeah, I have one Lake Charles lady who was a social media influencer for the local casino that I'm still friends with today.
Still talk to.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. It is interesting. My first ever Airbnb vetting was for my guest room in a very like 1,000 square foot house directly across the hall from my bedroom. And so now when I get requests, I see people with their cabins who are like, oh, they don't have any reviews. I'm not hosting them. Or, oh, like they didn't respond to this message. And I'm like, I bet I'm like, I don't care at all with my, I mean, I care who's there, but I trust people because I for years hosted them in my house and was totally fine. So I just, you lose that sensitivity about someone else in your house.
Yeah,
I
that makes
think. I
sense.
think it's a good way to start hosting.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
One thing, I mean, we are sensitive to a lot of the rhetoric around affordable housing and things like that. And one of the things that pushed us over the finish line to do this remodel in Louisiana was there was so much need for temporary housing to help contractors be there and help, quality people be there. And so it was actually felt like it was doing a good thing. And we kept the prices down just to, because you could gouge people. There was so much demand, but you also,
We
you can't
hosted
get back.
one guy from he was from the PGA tour, and he like came for relief because they wanted to use Lake Charles for a PGA tour of some event. We he hosted he came to our place, and we hosted him like two different times.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Well, wouldn't it be nice if you were going somewhere for work to stay with like friends that you knew, like the first time you just rented it, but now you're like, you know what? I'm gonna go stay with Ivana and Darren, like my buddies, who I've stayed with before. It feels so different than just going to a hotel. I don't know. Maybe it's not for everyone, but I loved that experience. We're not building yet. We're dreaming of building a garage next to our house for Sean, who's a mechanic. But I told him I would only do it if we could put
Brilliant.
a studio on the top
Brilliant.
so that I can host in our house again. And he's like, fine, you're giving my garage away, but at least I'll get a garage.
Tell
So
him
that's
that the
our
garage
plan.
is going to be paid for.
Exactly, it is. Although the only thing I can't figure out is how to work a 1031 exchange because that's on our primary property. So we're going to have to pay all the capital gains, but I think it's going to be worth it to create that because I do want to host in our house again. And it's different when it's at a cabin. Okay,
It is.
Louisiana to
Sorry.
Colorado. That's how you know, right. That's how you got your cabin money.
Yep.
So you both knew immediately that this was your cabin money. Did you know Colorado?
Yes.
Yeah, and for a number of reasons, because we do seem to move around a bit, and so we're kind of all over the country and we don't really know where next is. We really wanted to create a place that we could get to that our kids, right? At this point, we knew we had one child. We were thinking about having more. And so we knew we wanted to raise them with a central familiarity, nostalgia kind of place. And so that's what the cabin was intended to be for us. And that way we knew that no matter where we live, you can always fly into Denver and you can be at the cabin in an hour and a half, 2 hours.
And creating that same experience, it sounds like that Ivana had as a child of learning to love the mountains and the outdoors from a very young age just by experiencing it and seeing all the like joyful things that come with it. So how did you decide what when you started and you knew, what did that search process look like? I'm already overwhelmed by all the work that you guys have done. I can't even imagine beginning another project at this point in your life.
I can't admit it.
In retrospect, I don't know what we were thinking. But,
yeah, it's weird when someone asks you, like, to talk about yourself, because we're like, well, we've done and seen a lot of shit, but, like, how do you not come off that way in a bad way? But
no, you're... Yeah. This is fascinating to hear because I feel like my friends look at me and are like, you're crazy with all the projects that I take on. So when I find someone where I'm like, you're crazy in a good way, it's a compliment. I'm just like, man. Yeah. If I feel exhausted hearing what you're doing, it's like you have done a lot. Okay. So you're living in New Orleans or in, not New Orleans, like, in Louisiana at this point. Yeah. And you start looking in Colorado. Do you take trips there and start looking around? Did you already know a city? How did this even, where did you go from there?
Well, we knew we wanted to be, well, we thought we knew we wanted to be near Breckenridge. And so, like, that was kind of like our main focal. And then we kind of branched out from there. We knew we couldn't afford, like, downtown. And so we were maybe looking, we looked a few places in Summit County, which is where Breckenridge is. So we looked as far as Montezuma, which is closer to, like, Silverthorne and I-70. And then we also looked in, like, Blue River, which is kind of close to where we ended up. And we pretty much did the searching ourselves. And then one house we went and looked at that we really thought had serious potential, and we just contacted the listing agent, and she was amazing. She like knew, she recognized quickly, like, it wasn't our first time, and so she just kind of let us do our thing and was just the boots on the ground for us. And yep. Wow, I cannot recommend her enough. Like, she was one of our best assets in the early stages and still to this day. Definitely, she was just great. She recognized we knew what we were doing and we didn't need a lot of help, and she wasn't pushy.
But just very supportive.
Super supportive, answered any questions, went to the counties for us, did the
So we knew going into it, we knew that we wanted to get a place that we could go to right away. And it didn't have to be anything amazing, but just a place for us to be able to go and enjoy. And then we knew we were working on this remotely. So we knew that we wanted to have the ability to build a second property. And that was, like, a really key focus for us. And it's challenging to find. It's even more challenging to find. I think a lot of your listeners remember in that time frame. So this was 2020, 2021, cabins and real estate and short-term rentals were just going insane. And so stuff was going way too expensive. And so we ended up just getting really lucky. We found a place that was almost exactly what we wanted. It was a livable, nice cabin that was also it was on a 2-lot parcel, and the second lot turned out to be buildable and with a little bit of work. And then that was that was the trigger point. We actually bought it sight unseen. The first time we ever saw it was after we picked up the keys.
Yeah, I was in labor signing the DocuSigns.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Okay, so you didn't see it when you were under contract even. You closed on it without seeing it.
Yeah. Now,
wow, that's a first.
We have some partners too. We have some friends that are silent partners in the deal, and they did see it. So they were able to scout it and say, yeah, this is a fit. Because we went to a number and we said, these aren't going to work. And then this one was, okay, this is going to work out. So we did have some.
And you trusted your realtor.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So you had that too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And she went to the county for us and like vetted that we could build on it. And like, she really did a ton of like the pre-permit process for us before we even closed.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you're literally having a baby, signing paperwork. So now you have a newborn and a brand new property. Mm-hmm. What were your next steps? When did you get to see it? Because you were living in Louisiana at that point. So when did you first get to travel as a whole family to see it?
Well, it was the day we closed, right?
Well, yeah, but we were on the Southern road trip when she was. And then that was our last. So she was born, and then 4 weeks we went on a Southern road trip as part of like his daddy leave, parental leave, whatever you want to call it. It was his time, and we were like, well, I feel good. The baby's doing great. Like, let's do a road trip because I don't know how long we're going to be in the South. And so we rented a
little teardrop.
Teardrop trailer? Yeah. And we road tripped around.
So it was a newborn.
A newborn.
She had a great time.
Yeah. We also had a great time.
Except for in the Smoky Mountains.
Okay, this makes me feel like I could be a parent. I feel like I'm so scared of the newborn phase and like being tied down. And you're like, no, we rented a trailer and just like went on an adventure.
Newborns suck and they're a lot of work. I love them. It's a fun stage. Like they can go anywhere and then they sleep almost anywhere. So that's the best part about the newborn stage. And so we just took advantage of it. But it is a lot of work. But
it was fun.
Yeah, so we did a southern road trip, and then the last leg of that trip was we got back home, and then like the next day or two, we flew to Denver to close on the cabin. That's how it was, because she was 6 weeks old when we went to the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what was it like when you first got there? Was it everything you had expected that it would be?
Yeah. I mean, and then some. We originally didn't think it was going to be furnished, but then we got the keys and it was fully furnished. And like in a lot of ways, it was such a blessing, but then it was so hodgepodge. Like people had just been dumping all their secondhand stuff there for 10 years.
And then you have to get rid of it.
Yeah. And so we made dump runs and thrift runs and Facebook marketplace runs.
But we did. We met a really wonderful person that's our cleaner now by listing stuff on Facebook marketplace. Mm-hmm. So I'm a huge advocate of that. It's kind of upcycling. And you make such great relationships.
Yeah. And we closed on it. And then I think the one complaint was that the staircase down to the lower floor was a little bit steeper than we were hoping. Yeah, but other than that, it was great.
That's not too bad. If that's the worst of it, that's not too bad. Was your plan to start building the next one right away, or with time, start renting the one, make some money, and then put that into it? What was the plan? And I am a little bit curious about the finances to grow this many properties this quickly. Are they each paying for the next one? Are you saving money as you go? How did you approach that? The cabin we know that you bought with the money from the hurricane, was that enough to also build on top of, or did you get a construction loan for that one? How did you make that work?
It was a construction loan. So we used, for the most part, the hurricane payout kind of took care of buying, down payment, buying the place, having the two lots, and a little bit of infrastructure work and kind of getting going on design and things like that. We did have some savings kind of accumulated that we wanted to use. And then we did get a construction loan for sort of the max that the bank would do for us, which was, I think it was about $650,000. And they just wouldn't go higher than that, kind of jumbo loan territory and all that. Mm-hmm. So we did have to fill a little bit of gap on the top end of that. But we were also able to count some of our land as down payment in the construction loan.
Yep.
So that helped us kind of close that gap.
And then I'm always curious about this with folks who have multiple properties. Do you view it like, and I know, Darren, you do the financial side. So do you view it as like, do you go into the micro details of every property every month and like how much gross is coming in, what our expenses are, what our profit is? Is it all in one bank account? So like that income could then help pay for the construction loan while you were still building and not seeing revenue on that rental yet? How do you do all that?
Yeah, so Ivana does the majority of the actual bookkeeping day to day. So as expenses roll in, we use Stessa, which is a really fantastic STESS.
It's assets backwards.
Assets backwards. Stessa.
Oh, I've never heard of this.
Hot tip. Check it out.
It's a free service. Yeah. You can pay up for it, but the free service is actually really good.
We did recently upgrade to the professional service because you get to a property count and it doesn't work as well. We used it for a long time as a free service, and it imports your transactions. So we have credit cards and checking accounts that it just sees any spend on that account. It pulls in, and it's actually really good about.
I do all of that manually.
No, don't do that. Check this out.
What?
It's not bulletproof. You still have to like be on top of it because like some things will go through and some things won't, and you can definitely maximize that. But yeah, it's not bulletproof, but it's a lot better.
I would say it's damn good.
But yeah. I do that anyway. I like seeing the details, so I wouldn't mind like clarifying. But if it can do some of it for me, I'm gonna play around with this. Check okay, this good out. Tip.
Yeah. So then we so she does a lot of the managing, filing things, all that. But I usually
when the kids are sleeping.
Yeah. During nap time. I usually do the sort of month-end statements, and because I get a lot of joy. I don't think Ivana does. I get a lot of joy out of actually like combing through all the numbers and just, it's total same sickness. So I get that.
Yeah.
And I'll spend hours doing that just because I do enjoy it. Otherwise, I probably would outsource it.
That's right. Possible. I wouldn't do it if I didn't like it. I don't recommend it to anyone who doesn't find joy in it. But absolutely. At the end of every month, when I get to look at all of our numbers, I'm like, all right, how did we do?
And then you get into all this analysis. Like, I don't know if you do like AirDNA or any of the price labs that you talk about a little bit on here. And so we do that. So we'll look at all the nuances of the business, and it's fun.
I'm not great at that. The price, because I don't do any dynamic pricing. I do it all manually, and I will regularly like not plan far enough ahead and miss a holiday, and someone gets a great deal. But I do like thinking about the pricing, and I analyze it every season. What were we at last year? How long did it take us to be fully booked? Should we raise it? Should we keep it the same? Like, I do like thinking about all of that stuff.
You guys are sick.
I realize my husband feels the same way. Sean is just like, whenever I have the computer out, he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, finances. And he's like, didn't you do that yesterday? And I'm like, it's different finances.
It's a whole nother
lot to look at here. Yeah.
It's fun. Yes. So that's kind of how we figured out, right? Those are our lanes.
Yes. So then that does make it easier to have a build, like a construction loan coming in after you have a handful of properties that are all, because that's the hardest part about building, I think, is that you have this construction loan that you have to be paying every month and you don't have any income coming in from the property yet. But if you have previous rentals, then that can help to pay that rather than you just doing that out of pocket.
Yeah. It does help. It's definitely, so full disclosure, Colton told us 12 months. We got a loan for 15 months. You know, we could give ourselves a little cushion. It matured 6 months ago. Was okay, the bank's calling, it's time to go to full payments. And we were not even close. So we did extend it. You can pay like a half a point or something like that to extend it. And then, I think a lot of the loans do offer that, but it's expensive. And so that's just cash gone, but it helps you preserve your cash flow. So we did that once. And then, we're coming up very quickly on 2 years on the build that we thought would take 1 year.
So fun.
What are the biggest things? Yeah. I mean, you're not alone. I'm not even allowed to talk about my build on the podcast because we had a good experience. And that is just so rare. Almost everyone has more of this kind of experience. What were the biggest slowdowns for you all? The biggest speed bumps you ran into?
I don't even know. So things that went really well, maybe I'll start with that list because it's smaller. The permitting process with the county. So Summit County, which is where Breckenridge is actually pretty challenging. And then if you just go over the hill to Park County, where we are and where we've really fallen in love with, we didn't know how much we were going to love it there. It's been amazing. Mm-hmm. Just definitely more our vibe, and we didn't expect that. But it's been a lot easier just to work with the county. The people behind the desk will call you at home and kind of talk with you. And
Georgia. She's
Georgia,
great.
She's amazing.
Here come those friends.
That's what it's all about, those relationships. So that part went really, really well.
Also a notary, very handy.
Mm-hmm. And
Georgia is also a notary?
Also a notary, the Frank County Permit Office.
Georgia.
She's notarized multiple documents for us. So yeah, very helpful. We had success with our drawings. We worked with AV Rame. And
yes.
So we had, I would say good and bad experiences with them. Mm-hmm. The front office was challenging, but the actual product once delivered, we were quite happy with. But we had to do a lot of the heavy lifting on the design ourselves, which we didn't fully expect to do. That was kind of not part of what we thought was going to be the deal.
Yeah. Okay, though, I do kind of love that you went with a Kit A-frame when Ivana's grandfather got the first cabin as a Kit from Sears.
I didn't even put that together. Like, I knew my whole life that it was a Kit house. But when I really, when your questionnaire came, I was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
And they were from Colorado, which is funny. So
your grandparents were?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Prairie Colorado, not mountain Colorado, but.
Yeah. Which I didn't know was the thing. I had never been there until just a couple years ago. And when we landed at Denver, I was like, I'm not in Colorado. Like, what is this? Because it was so freaking flat.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start driving towards Boulder and you're like, oh, okay, I came to the right place. But I did not know that was a thing.
Yeah. So it is funny. Kit comes in many generations.
Yeah.
That's right. We're still doing it.
Yeah.
So that was really well. Some things that were challenging, either budget-wise or delay-wise, it really is sourcing contractors in that area. It's pretty remote for contractors, right? They're all over in Breckenridge. So you end up feeling like you're paying Breckenridge price plus, because you, in a lot of times, sometimes you find locals and they're really happy to, if you get lucky, you find these amazing local people that want to work on that side of the pass. But otherwise, people have to drive 18 miles to come to your place. And they're leaving Breckenridge, where there's a lot of building and a lot of work, and coming out to your remote little mountain town, which is a hard pull.
Framers were fantastic. Carpenter was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Is fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had some wins.
So it was just waiting for the pieces to come together, like getting the plumbing done so that this can get done, or like.
Yeah. So linear, right? Nothing felt like it could be done in parallel. You know, the roofer, you would think, would roof while the plumber is plumbing on the inside. That's how I would do it if I was just knocking it out myself. That is not how it works, apparently, in this environment. So everything just took longer.
How far are you guys from your own build that you do it start to finish? Is that something that you ever think about? It feels like you have a lot of the skills.
Yeah.
I think we would have, now knowing what we know now, we should have just done it. We should have been our GCs in a lot of ways. But we were thinking, like, I felt like we were going to get like a real like full build kind of contractor situation. And that's not what it ended up being. Like, some of it for the good, most of it for the good. But yeah, I don't know. And also just like, we had two kids back to back. I did.
Yeah, you weren't living there. I don't think this was probably the right build for you to do that, but it feels like you're developing one project at a time, all the skills that you need to tackle a build from start to finish on your own.
Yeah. So obviously, I don't think we could do it from the UK to GC it. I mean, maybe we could. No, now we know more. But
we do a build on our own, whether it was GC or actually, I mean, I'd do it tomorrow if I could. But it's, I think from a... just family situation, and then also just work and being able to, you know, take care of the kids, also go to work and do the W-2 thing. It just, it's just out of reach right now. And then it feels like it could be 5-10 years out, and that could be something that we take on.
There is something to be said. I mean, I still run my business non-rental related, and there is something to be said for like a full-time salary when you're doing that. If there's a hard month or like COVID hits, which was, you know, the shutdown rentals, it was like, okay, this is scary, but like I can swing it. Although at that time, my business was also slowly shutting down. But in theory, anyway, you run into something and you're like, okay, there's some consistency here. It does feel challenging to just run rentals as your full-time job. I know people do it. For me, it still feels, I don't know, one step too far.
Yeah, and I don't know how you do everything you do, but it's between the podcast and everything, and all the rental management.
Well, the podcast is fun, so that doesn't count. That's just like, I thought about this the other day, and I was like, think about how many cabin owners I've just had like coffee with. And like, if it weren't for the podcast, how would I couldn't just message all these people and be like, hey, want to hop on Zoom for an hour and chat?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, count us in for the retreat at your friend's, what is it? The wedding venue. Count us in.
I know. I do really want to do that. Yeah. I think it would be really fun to like for everyone just to get to hang out. So listeners, you heard it here first. I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast already, but I think that would be a great idea. Oh, probably when I was talking to Mandy, I'm sure I mentioned it. Ivana, you mentioned something in your pre-interview document, or actually, I don't know who filled it out.
It was the both of us. Yeah. Well, yes, it is both of us.
Isn't it interesting that I just assume when it's a couple that the woman does? Because often it is. But I didn't mean to make that assumption. You said one of the things you think about a lot is integrating with the communities that you're in. And I love this idea. I've talked about it on the podcast before, but you're also a remote host, as am I. So I'm curious how you tackle that with multiple properties in multiple places and you yourself not being there. What are the ways that you integrate your rentals into the community or reflect the community in them?
Mm-hmm. So I would say, because most of the short-term stuff, like, we've been actually part of the community, so we didn't reach out as much. Especially being in the UK, like, I have to, it's actually been really, really good for us, for me, I don't know, us. It really pushes us. It's like, I really have to think out of the box. I have to get, like, out of my comfort zone because I'm relying on other people all the time. Okay, it's just you in the camera. So I've had to get really creative, and I also want to celebrate. Like, I love it there. Like, I would love to spend part of my retirement there, you know? So I don't want to just, I want to give back more than I take, I guess. And yeah, ultimately I am taking, but I want to give more than I take. So we've done a lot more work of like partnering, and some of it is fairly developed. Some of it's still developing, but I'm really going with like as local as I can and then branching out from there to keep it like Colorado based. So if I can't source it within like the two counties that we're closest to, then I branch a little further and then vice versa. But yeah, I mean, we found our cleaner from like giving stuff away on Facebook Marketplace, and she's been, I mean, can't do without her.
Oh, a good cleaner when you live far away is everything.
Everything. And so, yeah, I mean, we try to be like fair. We try to be, you know, we try to pay well. I mean, we don't, I wouldn't say like we're giving it away or anything, but we, you know, we try to be competitive as best we can. And we try to really celebrate what our counties have to offer. Like we're starting partnerships with some local artists. So we had some mugs, some custom mugs commissioned, and I've kind of developed a relationship with her, and she's like helped me find like a wallpaper, and she's helped connect me with other artists. So some things that we want to do is like do like a rotating private pop-up art gallery at our place. So they have like a beautiful $1 million cabin to put their artwork in and like really celebrate it. And I mean, that works for me because my art budget is shot right now, but they get a beautiful place to put their stuff and hopefully someone buys it.
Right.
Some other things is just...
I love this as a way to save on the art budget.
Well, yeah. I think it
we've
was
also
you.
Spent plenty on the art budget.
Yeah, but... yeah, yeah. If I remember right, didn't you advertise at one point what your art spend was or something? This is way
yes.
Plan, right? I've been following you for a while.
Yeah, I just put our yearly expenses and then I got a whole bunch of shit on the internet for how much I spent on art. Everyone was like, do you redecorate the whole cabin every month? And I was like, no, I just buy nice art. Yeah, so when I saw that you were going to do that, I was like, I like this idea. This is a budget hack right there.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, it's not all finalized, but it's enough that I feel like I can talk about it. So her name's Erica Donaghy. And then, she's connected me with some other local artists that we hope to showcase some of her work there. We have, this is, you're hearing it first here, but we have a local jewelry smith. And so I'm working with her directly to make us like A-frame pendants of our A-frame. And I may or may not be doing a giveaway when we launch the A-frame. Depends on if it gets finished in time. But yeah, like I'm working with her. I'm really trying to think out of the box where, you know, I can pay her for her skill and benefit the both of us. And I have some other things in the work as well. But we're just trying to really get in the community, celebrate Park County, because Breck is right there. Everybody knows Breck. Nobody knows Park. And some people don't want it that way. But, I mean, they need us just as much as we need them.
Yeah.
And so we realize that. Like, we're going to wash each other's hands. But we don't want to be your commercial cabin in Breck. We don't want to be a turn and burn place. Like, we want to be intentional. We want to share our dream cabin with people. Like, we built it for us. I mean, we definitely took in consideration, like, having guests. But... like the massive range. I did that for me. He did that for me, I should say.
You like cooking, so get a good range. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, just certain things like that. Like, we didn't need a fussy wood stove. I like bring it back to my great grandma's cabin. Like, a wood stove was everything, you know? So
everything.
Yeah. So like we built it for us with the mind of like sharing it with others. And so part of that is our community. Like, we want to show the community too. Being in the UK has been great. Like, it really has forced me to get out there, be clever. And I'm not asking most of these businesses, I'm not asking them to give anything away. I'm paying them more or less.
Buying the stuff to then,
Right. And so we're using it as more of like a collaborative thing, but not a free collaborative. Like, these people, you want to celebrate them. Right. And if you guys both get enjoyment and press out of it, that's great.
This is one of the interesting things about Instagram, is that you don't often know the people behind the cabins on Instagram, right? Which there's obviously a lot of downsides to that. But the advantage is, like, I followed you for a while, I think. It seems like it. And I had no idea you lived in the UK, right? Like, I thought you were just like my cabin friends in Colorado. And so building relationships with local businesses, I've done a lot of that via Instagram. And they don't even know that I don't live, that I'm in North Carolina as I'm like typing that message. But you're still able to support each other that way through tags, through giveaways, through whatever. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Instagram has made that more doable.
Yeah. When we were building, and he follows so many accounts that are cabin and A-frame related, but like we couldn't find that many that were super transparent or would dive deeper. And so like, obviously we know like it's location dependent, it's timing dependent and XYZ, but like, yeah, I think it helps to give people a base. Cause I mean, if you've never done remodeling, you've never done a build, like you're kind of going into it pretty blind.
Yep. Yeah. And there's not a lot. I feel like most cabin accounts are just pretty pictures of their cabin. And I totally hear that. That's really effective for marketing to guests, I'm sure. But I'm so interested in the other stuff behind it, the business side of it, the financial side of it. When I share my numbers, I get so much shit from my family. They're like, I can't believe you're talking about money on Instagram. But I'm just like, how do you empower people to think they can do this if you don't talk about the number one thing that they're going to need to understand in order to do it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's been a real goal of ours because of that kind of lack of transparency in the space. We really want to be, we're not ashamed, right? We weren't trying to build the cheapest cabin in the world. We're not trying to build the most expensive. We're trying to build ours, right? And so our numbers are our numbers. And we don't mind sharing and then talking about kind of the lessons we learned along the way and some of the pain points.
We had a 15-year story to get where we are. It didn't just like, Instagram, you know?
No, but following you on Instagram, and this is why I think it's so important that we, and by we, I mean me, start prioritizing folks that don't like outside of Instagram. It's not about having like 100,000 followers, but I just think there's so many good stories hidden and Instagram says nothing about the success of the cabin or the humans behind it. You know, it's just a matter of if you can hack the algorithm and figure it out or not, you know?
Which we're probably not very good at.
No,
but
terrible.
It is fun.
You have to really like Instagram, I think. So I feel similarly about Instagram as I feel about finances and the whole understanding the backside of Instagram. And I like study my analytics and I'm like, which posts are doing well and why. And then the ones, the educational ones are the ones that never do well, but they're my favorite. So I do them anyway.
That's funny. For us, like we get a ton of traction on our financial ones. Like anytime we share our financials or loans and stuff, I mean, we're a small account, but yeah, anytime those are my biggest hits.
So interesting.
Well, yeah, outside of giveaways, because usually it's a collaborative with like, yeah.
Bigger people.
Yeah. Giveaways don't count though, because that's literally, it's a smart strategy, but it's a strategy to get followers.
Yeah. I mean, your followers go up, but guess what? They also come down because they don't win and they're not interested. And so that's okay. That's the way it goes.
Well, and it hurts your engagement. So I'm talking about this with my social media manager now of like, I'm supposed to be doing a giveaway. Well, I think we are doing it, but it kills your engagement. I mean, temporarily good, but then you have more followers and they're not actually interested in engaging with your content. So it only really helps if it's accounts of people. So the one we're doing is, I think it's called Wandering Women Who Hike. And that's fine with me. Cause I'm like, okay, you're outdoorsy women. Like this might be something that you just haven't found yet. That could be good, but it also has the potential to bring in a bunch of new followers who don't ever engage with your content. And then shoots you in the foot. But you had mentioned in your pre-interview about exploring Airbnb Lux. And this is something that I've considered, but have done zero research. Can you share with the people what it is and why you're considering it and just what you've learned so far?
Sure.
Yeah. They're pretty close. They don't really talk too much about it on their platform. So I don't know if you've ever, okay. So if you go to,
I've only seen them when traveling and I see them pop up and I'm like, oh, this is really fancy. How do we get this? And then that's as far as
explored. Like, have you ever stayed in Airbnb Lux? We haven't. Mm-mm. Yeah. We actually booked our first one because we have a large party and we were like, oh, this is good research. So, we could bring our costs down and
we can write it off.
Yeah. So, their shtick is that they have high quality appliances. They have like all the amenities, more or less, you know, that you because you know, like sometimes when you're traveling in, like, I don't know, in Europe, sometimes you don't always have like whatever, XYZ. Yeah. Or you go to, like, we just went to a place in Wales and they had like one roll of toilet paper. It's like, come on now. Like, there's five people on the listing. Come on. Yeah.
That happened to me in Patagonia too. And I never realized how important that was until there were three of us.
Yeah.
And we had had our morning coffee. And so everyone's ready for their morning poop. And then we're like, there's no toilet paper.
Yeah. And so it's like, okay, like, I'll go buy toilet paper, which isn't a big deal. But also, come on, like, it wasn't a free place. Like, we chose you because you were in our budget and it fit our needs. So
yeah.
Anyways, but so they did just kind of make sure that you have all the amenities you could want. And then they have a curated add-on section. And to each place, it's a little bit different. And I don't know the details about this in full yet because we don't have it. And two, we have to like finish our listing. And so I've tried to do a lot of pre-work before like our listing is actually public. And I was dealing with one person who seemed like they were going to like work with us to get us like pre-approved, and then we got shut down, which is super annoying. So now I have to wait until like our listing is fully done and then resubmit again. So basically it's very classic Airbnb troubleshooting. You like, you send an email to the Lux team and then you give them like your criterias and then they'll get back to you in a few days. And then you have like, then reiterate, well, yeah, but your rules say this, so that's why I'm reaching out. And then they'll be like, oh, okay, well, you know, come back to us when you have a listing active. So we're working through all of that, but they want to produce like a really beautiful place that you can add on amenities like massages. Some of them will even do like childcare. Some of them will have, I don't know, they have all the grocery deliveries, stuff like that. And so a lot of that we're actually sourcing on our own. And I don't know if that's going to be beneficial to us or not, but it's something that we want to give everybody the opportunity to add on. So like, even if we do direct bookings, we still want to say like, hey, like, we'll be your concierge for free. You know, like, you pay for your services and we can get you connected. Yeah. So I don't know if that's going to play to our benefit or not, or if they have like their own people that are within the area to service that for us. That's a lot of the stuff that I don't know. But basically, they want like a nice place with good amenities, good appliances, so that way when you're a person booking Lux, like, you know what to expect. Like it's not going to be a broken dishwasher or like the paint peeling and stuff like that.
The good appliances is so interesting to me because even good appliances break. Like appliances break is like a hard thing to control.
Yeah, but it's like, so I don't know exactly the tier of what they consider like a good appliance.
Right.
I don't know those details, but what they do is they will send a third party out there to survey the property. So sometimes it's through like a walkthrough of the home, like via FaceTime or whatever. And sometimes they'll actually send a physical person. And then the other service they offer is they'll hire professional photos for you that's like certified with Airbnb Lux.
Yep.
So I'm not sure how all of that is going to pan out for us, but yeah, that's kind of what we're trying to bring.
What if they sent out secret shoppers? Like they paid for a stay and sent out someone who like did real investigative research.
Honestly, I would love that. It would have so much credibility.
I would too.
Yeah.
I would want the feedback. I would want to know how we did. Like, I kind of like that idea.
Well, you should pitch that to them. So.
I wish they did.
Yeah. It's just kind of unfortunate because like a lot of the things, I'm sure you feel this way. You've been hosting as long as I have, but like Airbnb used to be so host like oriented and just it's gotten so commercial that it's more customer based. And like, I understand like, you know, things change, things adapt. And some of the things they've changed are for the better, but it just feels so like personalist, I guess. Like you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just hard when you grow. And I've had frustrations recently too, but then I see everywhere, I don't know if you've seen this or heard this, but every podcast I listen to, every big one now has Airbnb commercials. Every show I'm streaming that has commercials has Airbnb commercials. And I do have to think about those. The benefits of growth is that in this culture where people are talking a little bit of shit about Airbnb, it's getting trickier. Towns are regulating.
Mm-hmm.
Like Airbnb has millions of dollars that they can put into marketing campaigns that we can't, right?
Right.
So then I'm like, okay, there's definitely the pain points of a growing, scaling company who's as big as they are now versus what it was like 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah. It's just funny. Like I'm sure you've noticed the same thing, but it's just like, we had such a advantage in a sweet spot, you know, five plus years ago, where it was like, you know, they really needed you and they made you feel that way. And now it's like, well, we don't really need you, but we also need you. So thanks for coming.
We need you, but there's a lot of you. So we can't really like support all of you as well as we can.
Exactly. And that's the way it goes. But yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like it's made us think a lot with direct booking. And, you know, we didn't really know if that was, we've never really done anything other than Airbnb.
Yeah, we've always been Airbnb. Yeah. We've been Airbnb loyalists for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, both traveling and hosting.
I mean, even like 6 years ago, I made an anthem film for work and I had to just pick a brand that I was passionate about. And I was like, I'm going to do Airbnb. have always like, loved their brand. And for the most part, I've still had good customer service, but it's just, it's kind of like with guests. I try to remind myself, it's kind of like, when we have the quantity of guests we've had over the last 9 years, you're going to get 4-star reviews and it's going to feel bad and be crappy, but like you can do your best and still just disappoint some people. And I feel like that's the stage they're at.
Well, I actually think Candace said it best. She said, you know, like most of the people I get really good feedback. She says, it's the ones that don't actually know or do the research of what my place is. Like, I can't stress that enough. Like if there's any listeners out here who is just, I mean, most of your listeners probably do read the house rules and the information, but like, if somebody's listening out here and they've never read that, like read it. It's actually there for a reason.
I know. But then there's a part of me, I totally agree. Then the teacher in me, we used to always say, if they're not learning, we're not teaching.
That's a good point.
So then I wonder, like, if they're not reading my listing, what am I doing wrong in my list? Am I not putting the important stuff up high enough? Am I not making it easy enough to understand? Am I not messaging them? Like, I always tend to then think like, what am I doing wrong that they're not seeing these? But it is frustrating when you feel like you've done a really good job of it and then you're still running into like, that wasn't in my listing. Like,
It's so hard because like you want to fit it all in, but like also you can't just tell everybody like how your house works.
I know.
Like, we look super private and the feel is private, but we're also in a residential neighborhood.
That's a tricky one. Of course, you're going to photograph it without showing the neighbors because you don't want to show the neighbors. And then they show up and they're like, there's neighbors. And you're like, yes, you're 7 minutes from town.
There's neighbors. There it is.
Other people live here too.
Like, I don't know what to tell you. They're not in your business. You can only see one house, but there is a house. Like, I'm not misleading you. I'm just not going to show that picture on my list.
Like I've had a rural cabin. I love the work of a rural cabin, but most people don't. So if you want to be and 7 minutes to town and, you know, toilet paper.
That's right. And that's how our mountain cabin is. And then we face the battle of like, oh, it's snowing and there's mountain roads to get up there and it's 20 minutes to town. And so you don't really have any neighbors, but you have these things. So it's like, you can't really win. But anyway, I could talk about hosting all day. It was so good to meet you guys.
What time is it there? It is almost nine.
Okay. All right. So
feels
it's not
like
too late.
Thank you. The kids are asleep.
Amazing. Thank you for giving up some of your evening in order to have this conversation.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thanks for having us. We really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for joining us. And if you liked what you heard, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or share some of your favorite parts over on Apple Podcast. If you have feedback or suggestions for the future, you can also find me on Instagram at Cozy Rock Cabin. Looking forward to next week.